So I'll start just with a quick PowerPoint, and then we'll go through the website, which is the main reason to be sharing my desktop. And so basically, we are a one of the phase one projects funded by the National Science Foundation, and we're working regionally. And our region is the Pacific Islands. And one quick note about the Pacific Islands, the geographic extent of our region is larger than the continental United States. It covers like 6 hours in time zones, and including the day change. So it's an interesting place to kind of work. And it's a collaboration between just trying to move the join me thing that's on the top here, but collaboration between Prell and WestEd, and we serve what's called the U.S.-affiliated Pacific Islands, and we have a focus on making connections between modern science and indigenous environmental knowledge. And key features are that we are developing a climate education framework where our scope of work is K-14, and basically what we're trying to figure out is what gets taught for the region, but I think also nationally, when, how, where, for, by whom. There's a focus, of course, on the climate change impacts, which are general, but also on the region's islands and communities. We're involving local communities with a focus on indigenous knowledge. We are part of what we're charged to do as a phase one partnership is to come up with a plan, a strategic education plan for what we're going to do in the region. And we're looking to collect curriculum resources and instructional strategies, and especially those that work in the Pacific region. And the third major key outcome, which has been a big focus of our work, we started about 7 months ago, is to develop a web-based information platform that will enable the development and eventual implementation of the regional climate education plan. And that's what most of the presentation will be about, is sharing that where we're at with that web-based platform. We have core partners, so one of the things we have to do, which makes sense as a phase one, is we have to involve climate scientists, learning scientists, and local practitioners. And we ourselves from Prell and WestEd cover some of those bases, especially knowing a lot about the region and a lot about science education. And more recently, we've actually brought in, as another core partner, the University of Hawaii, and they bring a lot of expertise and resources. We have a lot of supporting partners, which are local partners, and these are examples of them, and you'll see more when we get into the database kind of breadth of the local partners. And we have a very interesting advisory board. We had our first day-long face-to-face meeting just last week, and involves really interesting people, as you might see by quickly scanning the people on our advisory board. And what I wanted to highlight for the presentation today is where we're at with our web environment. You might hear me call it ReefNet. That's just our code name for it. And I want to emphasize it's a first draft. So it's got glitches. It's missing some features that we'd like to have, and it needs to be more populated than it is, but I think you'll get a sense of what we're trying to do. And what we're trying to do is to link the locations, the many islands in our region, the organizations that work on those islands and are involved in climate in any kind of way, and the people that work and that are in the region. And we're trying to, the website takes that, links all that information, and interlinks it with the content that we're dealing with, which is content about climate science, impacts, learning science, and the nature of the regional communities and cultures. As I mentioned, it's designed to support the collaborative development of our strategic education plan. I'll be sharing the current status and what our next steps are. And a part of it that I'd like to share is how we're organizing the education with respect to the climate science content and the climate impact content. So, without further ado, we'll escape out of there and go to the website. Okay, so there's actually, the website is public. Anybody can go there and look around. And there's also an opportunity to join and become a member of the partnership. And as a member to the partnership, then at the website you can do some things that you can't do as a non-member. You can add education resources, you can have your own page, and people can find out about you. Your organization, if it hasn't already been included, you can nominate your organization to be included. And you can also comment about what's there, and that's one of the ways that we see interactions happening through the website. And you can also build custom binders, and we'll see more about that, what that's like. If you kind of scan around, there's a, I'm going to highlight with my cursor, there's a main navigation, horizontal navigation bar where you can be checking out locations, people, organizations, find out about the project. And so this is pretty much what you would see as a person just coming, along with the invitation to join. And then you can also jump to the locations, and just wanted to highlight here the breadth of our geography. We include what's called the U.S. Affiliated Pacific Islands. It includes Hawaii, which is it's our only one of the 50 states. But all the rest of these entities are associated in some way with the United States, and they're actually they're actually things that we can spend federal dollars on. And there's been a lot of education work done in the region, coordinated mostly through PREL, which is our partner whose headquarters is in Honolulu, at Pacific Resources for Education and Learning. And as I said, it spans like somewhere like 6 hours difference in time zones. The whole extent of geography is larger than the continental U.S., and you actually cross the date line someplace in here, so people run days. Okay, so the next thing I want to share about this is what it would look like if one were logged in. So I'm going to go to, here's where it looks like if I were logged in. As you would notice, the join thing is all gone now. And there's this part up here, and this is part of our improving the user friendliness. This should be bigger. But this is the place that you go to if you are logged in and you want to do things as your own person there. One thing you can do is upload resources for people to share and use. So I'm going to show you a little bit about what that looks like. I'm clicking on the My Resources. So now we're in My Workspace. And anybody who's a member would have a workspace. On the workspace, there's three binders, three tabs. There's a tab for resources, and those would be resources that you have, as a member, have uploaded into the system. As one of the main administrators, I've been the person mostly that's been uploading resources at this stage. And just to give you an example of what we mean by a resource, here's some that some of you may know something about, something called the Climate Literacy, the Essential Principles of Climate Science we've put in. I wrote a document called Climate Science Overview, a 9-page overview that I also shared through the Clean Network on this conference call, and you can download that or look at it, and we'll go through that. Here's one from the National Institutes of Health, which I find it to be a useful one on health aspects. It's called The Human Health Perspective on Climate Change. The American Samoa K-12 Climate Science Standards. This is a local...
All right, this is Tamara. Can other people that have joined see your resources, or these are just for you to see, the ones you've uploaded?
So the resources, and yeah, everybody feel free to chime in like Tamara did. There's a lot to understand about this site, and I'm trying... So that's so the resources are there for everybody. You don't have private resources, but you do have a private way of organizing the resources. So we'll take a chance to look at that. I just want to give you a first shot of what resources look like. And when one puts a resource in, there's various things that one can tag the resource with. So I'm kind of highlighting under the climate literacy one, the very top one, I've tagged it to climate science. There's things there about how life affects climate, global climate, investigating climate. These are tags that one could apply to any resource, and you'll see how those tags are organized and why, what those tags mean and why they're there. And the one other little thing I want to mention at this time, you'll also see this thing called DSP. That's in our URL. DSP is the WestEd application that enables us to do all this work. And so you'll see that sometimes on the site. Okay, so that's one part of it is the resources. The other part on your personal page is where you tell people about yourself. So I've uploaded a little bio. Part of what we are doing here is creating a community of people that are all going to be focused on thinking about climate education in the Pacific region. Part of the DSP thing, though, enables this to be useful for other communities. So if some other regional partnership wanted to have something like this, they could do it, and then we could share resources, and then they would have their own individual stuff, just like we would have stuff focused on the US API. They could have stuff focused on the Four Corners region, if that was the partnership. Or since international was mentioned, it could be some other part of the world. So we see this as potentially something that could be useful more than just our partnership, but right now, obviously, we're focusing on our partnership. So everybody has a profile, and what's in the profile is what's viewable when somebody clicks on that person within the website to find out about them. And the person themselves can edit their profile, so there's this edit feature over here. Nobody else can edit your profile. And then one other feature of the site I want to show, which will introduce us again to some more things here, are binders. So one thing you can do on your personal workspace is as you've gone through, is if you have a project you're working on, or if you want to just have a place where you're collecting things that you found on the website that were useful, and you don't want to have to go searching for them again, you can just create a binder. You could call the binder, you know, first batch of useful stuff I found here, and then you could put those things in the binder so you wouldn't have to go find them again. You just go to your workspace, click on the binder, and there they are. I'm actually working on two projects that I've created binders for. One project is that I'm looking at how are we going to organize climate science K-12. So what kind of, you know, what would we be talking about and doing in K-2, 3, 5, 6, 8, 9, 12. So I put five resources in there that I think will be helpful to me. One thing to know about a binder is when you create a binder, you can choose to make it public or private. It can be just something you want to hold on to yourself. My binders are public because I want other people to see them and be able to think about how they might organize binders as well. The binder that I'll show you now is this binder called Climate that I created because we're working with American Samoa on helping them revise their science standards. And so we want to do that and help them think about how climate can be in their science standards K-12. So to help with that, there's various information within this PSEP website that I've put into this one binder. So one of them is everything we know about American Samoa to date. So that's in the location area. And then we've put in their current K-12 science standards, put in the climate literacy principles, this climate science overview document that I created, and then, you know, the major resource, about climate change impacts from the USGCRP, and then also the Washington State K-12 science standards, because they do a pretty good job of organizing things from a systems point of view. So those are some of the features. This kind of gets you to looking already at some of the kinds of features, but especially things that one can do in one's own workspace. And then one feature that we don't currently have, but that we will have, is a commenting feature. So as a member, if you looked at this binder and it raised some thought that you wanted to share with others, you could comment about the binder, and that comment would remain attached with the binder file. Okay, so now I'm going to switch out of my view as a logged-in member because I have powers that I can do that other people don't have that might be confusing if you see that on the site. So I just want to go back again to a view of what the site looks like if you're just an outsider You would see this as a member as well, but you would also have more capabilities as a member. So one thing that we've started to talk about is resources. And the resources that we have, we're organizing in four domains: climate science, climate impacts, learning science, which is really the science of learning, community and culture. So let's take a quick look at what we mean by resources, looking in the climate science area. So what happened? Oh, wait, I thought it went. I don't know why. Okay, so this is what happens when you click on resources. And the way we're organizing climate science is in a very system, Earth systems way. And so there's, as I said, there's four main areas: climate science, climate impacts, science of learning, communities and cultures. Under climate science, there's five subtopics: Earth system science, and then thinking just in general about what systems mean and how that applies to climate and Earth systems. And then thinking about planet in terms of matter, energy, life, and the emergent property of climate. And whenever you get to any kind of topic header, in this case we're at the highest header, climate science, what you'll see is a brief description of that. So here we're seeing climate science, and there's a very, you know, three-sentence thing about what you might expect to see under climate science. And then any resources that have been tagged to this highest level of the system, which is climate science. Let's take a look at a little deeper in. Let's look at the carbon cycle. So again, if we look at the carbon cycle, now we'll see that a very brief description of what we mean by the carbon cycle. Some resources that relate to the carbon cycle. Again, it's in the climate literacy standards. And then there's another level to the system, which is what we call key ideas. Key ideas are what they say, major ideas that we want people to know about. And if we click on one of the key ideas, take a look at what that looks like. Here's a key idea that if you really want to understand the carbon cycle, you should know that the carbon atoms on Earth constantly move around the planet in a cycle. Unlike the water cycle, the carbon cycle involves chemistry, and that it's important to us because carbon is part of life, and because of carbon's involvement with the climate as a greenhouse gas. Now this, when you look at a key idea, you also see the where that key idea came from. In this case, it came from this climate science overview document. So I'm going to take us to see what that, what other part is. Whenever you see any of these things here, you could search on them. So we could just do click on grades 9 to 12, and it would call up everything in the system that's in that grade span. But for now, we'll go to the climate science, this resource, the climate science overview. And when you go there,
I'm very sorry to interrupt, Dr. Art.
Yeah.
I'm back at the join.me window. Can you tell me how to access visually what you're showing?
Yeah. Enter the code 520-772-449.
520-772-449. 449. And do I click on code to enter that?
I can't see what you're seeing. Isn't there a place for you to put it in?
What I did was search using the code that was on the clean website, and it brought me to an iCharter window.
So I would say get out of everything you're in, just go to http://join.me.
Okay, hang on just a sec. Okay, join.me. And then where it says join, put in this code?
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you very much. Sorry to interrupt.
All right. Okay, so here we are looking at what it means to look at a resource. So this is a document that I created to help people understand how we're organizing climate science and a good way to think about teaching climate science from an Earth Systems point of view. It's a 9-page document. When you go to a resource, what you'll see, now somehow I ended up going there through me, not as a public user, so you'll see things here like delete. That's only because it's in the here as me as a high-level administrator. But this one is available to everybody. It's called View Source. So you can click on that just to see what does this document look like. And it takes a little bit of time. Boom, there it is. So now this is that whole document that's been uploaded into the system, and you can just scroll through it and read it right there. If you want, you can download the document, and then you'd have it for yourself. And another thing that you can do, for those of you who have been with me since the beginning, you could click on Clip to Binder, and then you would be able to put it in a binder. And as I said, that's only something that members can do. Membership is free. And then you can access that whenever you want. You wouldn't have to go searching, find that thing again. You might say, oh, there was this climate science overview thing. I'm not exactly sure where it was. It'll actually be right in your binder. So that's one of the features when you're looking at a resource. And another thing that you can see when you're looking at the resource, it's saying that this thing is good for grades 6 through 8, 9 through 12. You could just click on 6 through 8, and that would open up another window. And this window would show you what's all the stuff in this system that's been said as relating to grades 6 through 8. And then you would get results, and the results are a bunch of resources that have been said that they work in grades 6 through 8. Let's see what other kinds of stuff.
All right, this is Tamara again. This is anybody who's uploaded things to the system, it would show up here if they were in this grade range?
Yeah.
Have these been reviewed at all?
So far, everything that's been put in, basically, pretty much I or somebody else on our PSEP staff have put in. We're actually thinking now, and I have to talk with our web people, that when people want to put in a resource, that it might have to get approved before it becomes public for everybody.
So do you have a standard process for to looking at these, or do you just sort of go over them?
Well, we're just starting. So right now,
okay.
Our idea in the beginning was to make it easy for people to put resources up, so have them put them up, and then I would get notified and other key-level administrators whenever anything new got put up, and then we could check it out and make sure that we felt okay about it.
Mm-hmm.
If we had concerns, we could delete it and talk to the person. I'm already finding that there's issues about being careful about copyright, and if people start uploading stuff that are a lot of copyright infringement, it's actually going to endanger our site. So we might have to put a control level in between people or uploading resources and us, approving.
So people are actually uploading the resources rather than just the link to wherever the resource might be.
If they can do just a link. When they create a resource, they have to put in a description field saying, what is it about the resource. Ideally, they would tag it, about grade level and topics and those kind of things so that people could find them appropriately. And they would also put in a link to where people could access outside the system more information. But if it's a resource that is copyright free, that's shareable that way, then the idea is that people could just access the resource right within our system instead of having to go off the system to see it. And then we would also enable them to download it. So that's the plan.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, but as I said, I'm thinking now that we might have to interpose a layer between when people suggest a resource rather than immediately putting it up. So we're going to have some discussions about that. So this particular area we had looked at just all the things you might get to by searching on 6.8. And one thing I want to highlight here right now is that there's basically two ways that people negotiate through websites like this. One is browsing, which is what we've been doing, like just clicking around and seeing where you go. And the other is searching. And we have a very, so one good way to find out what's in the system is just to start searching around. And to search, you can either put in a word and then click on search. That would be in this box here. Or you could go to advanced search, which would take you to something that looks like this. And I'm going to do an advanced, I'm going to just do a search that shows, this will give you an idea of all the kinds of content in that you'd be searching. There's the binders, which I've described, where people have put information into one binder that they have on their individual workspace, and that you could choose to share or not share. There are key ideas, which are, anywhere from a paragraph to a page that really summarizes something really important that we should be all knowing about climate education in general or focused on the Pacific. Information about the locations that we serve, so these are the seven national entities within the US API. All the organizations that exist that serve, that relate to climate in the region or climate in general. And for us, we think there's going to be about 200, at least. Right now we have about 50 in the system. And that's one very useful thing that we're doing right now is people are overwhelmed with all the different acronyms and names and organizations that are involved, and there's no one place where you can go to find out about all that. And so we're going to be that. And then people, so all the people that are in the system that are part of this group that are working together on climate education in the Pacific and resources that we've been talking about. And I'm going to do a search now that'll pick out everything that's in the system that's in those areas. And right now there's 183 things in our system for that. There's 14 resources. We've talked a little bit about what resources are. There's 62 key ideas. We've talked about what those are. There's 18 locations. So there's, we'll go into that in a little more detail. There's 40 people in the system, and when you go to a person, you'd get that profile information about who they are. And then there's 47 organizations, and only two binders. So what I want to do now is, I think would be helpful, is to give you a sense of the organizations that are in the system. So if I just click on organizations, it should take us there. Okay, yeah. So there's 47 organizations, and I just want to give you a sense of all the different organizations. So there's community colleges. In our region, most of the entities don't have four universities. The main ones are the University of Hawaii and the University of Guam. But there's a number of community colleges, and we are starting to work with them. There's departments of education, and they're involved. We have representatives from the departments of education of each of the national entities that are part of our project. There's other projects. So this is a project that's funded to work on climate adaptation in the region, island climate adaptation, and they're one of our partners. We have the different school systems, as I mentioned. There's another community college. And then there's local organizations like the Conservation Society of Palau and the Conservation Society of Ponape, which are both national entities. Continuing to go down, there's things like the Guam's Fishermen's Cooperative, and just show another one that might be a kind of a different kind of entity. So NOAA is a group. We work with NOAA at all sorts of levels. And the one on the bottom here is an interesting one, the Pacific Island Health Officers Association. So there is a representative related to health or more on each of the island nations, and especially since health impacts, we see these people as key outreach people as well. So that gives a sense of the organizations that are part of the system. And what I'm trying to give a sense of is we're building this network that links together locations, the people that work there, the organizations. That's kind of the physical triangle basis that of our partnership. And then what we share is all the information, which are embedded in these resources and in the projects that we're doing to develop a regional strategic education plan. So I'm going to pause for a moment. If anybody has any questions or things they want to say that have been sparked by what I've been showing.
This is Tamara. You refer to sort of this core group of people that are putting up resources at this time. How much of your activities right now are involved in a large way all your partners?
There are partners that one of the important partners is a group called Paxis, which is a collaborative of a lot of organizations. NOAA sponsored, the manager of it is the Director of Climate Information System Services for the Pacific. And Paxis involves getting all the people together around climate information issues, and we are the education, we are leading the education part of Paxis. And as part of that, we've been meeting and planning with bunches of organizations. One that I mentioned is the University of Hawaii. There's just tons of stuff at the University of Hawaii. We're in an interesting position with them because they had originally proposed a partnership for the same region, so we couldn't work with them in our proposal. But once we got funded, we've been starting to work with them more and more. So part of what we're doing as a Phase one partnership, our job is to create a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've been doing. We've been meeting lots of people, talking with people, getting to know the region, mm-hmm. figuring out what's going to work in the region. Our job isn't to go out there and do teacher workshops yet.
Right.
Our job is to say, come up with a plan that makes the most sense for the region. Mm-hmm. And given that the region is so diverse, geographically dispersed, and that we're bringing in expertise from climate scientists, educators, local educators who really don't have that much basic understanding of climate science, learning science, and then we also have this whole perspective on culture and indigenous knowledge. The idea was that we need one central place where we could all be together, and it's a virtual meeting space, and where we can all find out about each other and share the same knowledge base. So we're not looking to put into the system resources like a research paper that's going to be really hard to understand. What we are starting to put into the system are resources that would help all the different people be on the same page. So we're not going to get into, very highly technical analysis of greenhouse gases, but some overview of greenhouse gases. So an example is I wrote a 2-page document, which is an overview of ocean acidification. So it's not getting into all, we will have more detailed stuff, but we also want to have one of our main things are things that help the kind of average literate person understand some key ideas that we all need to be on the same page about.
Art, this is Frank.
Frank.
I actually found my page and been uploading some sub pieces of NOAA into that I thought you probably should be aware of.
Great.
So if you have any questions about any of the sub pieces, I didn't really know how to do it other than put it into my bio.
Okay.
They're there and you can remove them if you need to. But one of the ones that I think is just to check with you is the kind of thing is. In NOAA, there are the Coral Reef Conservation Management Fellows.
Right.
And every one of them has an action plan, and they're in a lot of the places that are part of this initiative.
Right.
And they're on the ground in, American Samoa working on climate change education to help conserve coral reefs.
Yeah, I'm aware of them. Marco, what's his name? Paolo.
Paolo. So you're connected. Oh, that's the key name I need. So you got connected with Paolo?
Yeah, I got connected with Paolo. He sent an email to me and the person in American Samoa, and that's indicative of the wide variety of people and organizations that are connected but don't necessarily know about each other, and that this would be the one place that we can all interact.
And the other key one is Stephanie Bennett at Pacific Services Center. I think you met with her recently, is that correct?
Yeah, Stephanie and I met, and so we're starting, this just went public like a week ago.
Okay.
So we're trying to get people like Stephanie to put themselves into the system, and that's our effort over the next month. So as I said, this has been public for not very long, and we are working on getting it populated with more people, more organizations, and more stuff for us to share and use in collaborative work. But I'm glad you put stuff in there. I'll look at what you did.
Well, that's kind of why I'm asking that, is because right now NOAA is there, but, I mean, would you rather it be like NOAA Climate Program Office, NOAA Pacific Services Center, NOAA?
Probably.
I mean?
Yeah, so I just put NOAA in as an organization, but as a placeholder. But I think probably the Pacific Services Center should be in there. PAXIS is in there as an organization.
Right. Okay. And the last piece of this that I think would be really important for you is the National Climate Assessment. As it chugs along, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to handle the region that you're focused on and the sectors within that region, but I would imagine weaving them into this would probably be something that NSF would be interested in knowing that you know about and have figured out how to engage.
Are you talking about the process of the National Climate Assessment or the result?
Both.
Okay. Because I did put in from the USGCRP, the highlights about the Pacific Island region, about the island region, and then also their highlight booklet. I ran into an interesting thing. I uploaded the highlight booklet. I uploaded the whole USGCRP climate impact report.
Right.
And it turns out that there's some copyright material within that, and so it actually got bounced out because an individual can download it, a group can't upload it for other people to download because of that.
I got you.
So there are interesting, there's things that are coming up that we're having to figure our way around, and that's one of the reasons why I think we need to be a little more careful about having somebody be able to suggest a resource rather than just directly put a resource up.
Sure.
Right.
Working on that.
It sounds like you need it to go into an envelope for review.
Right.
Rather than to go up immediately.
Yeah. So we're looking at that now. Yeah. Originally, like I said, when you set up a new listserv or thing, it takes a while for people to get involved. So the fewer impediments you can put in their way, the better. But then there's other considerations that you have to take into account as well.
Bart, this is Tamara again. Is there a way that you could make available through your site the link to the Clean Pathway Collection, which has been reviewed?
Yeah.
That's one. And then the other side is that it may be an opportunity for you to suggest resources that might be reviewed by the Clean Pathway effort.
Yeah, well, I was going to talk with you guys about that. I could put a link to that one. I mean, what would be more interesting to us would be to be able to include within the site those resources that we think are particularly appropriate, curriculum resources that you guys have reviewed that are particularly appropriate for the region.
Well, one thing that we have talked about, I don't know where we are with actually implementing, is to include as part of the metadata regional applicability, so that you could then identify a region and then the resources that are appropriate for there might show up. That wouldn't then give you more general science kinds of resources, but it would identify those that are most appropriate for that region.
What percent of the curriculum resources that are in the CLEAN collection can I just have directly in the system?
I asked that you the question about uploading, but we don't actually house any of the resources. We provide links to where the resources are, and then we have annotations that came out of our review process to support teachers using those resources around the area, around science, around pedagogy, and around technical issues. So, like I said, we don't actually house any of the resources at all.
So I would check each one individually to see whether it's freely available to disseminate, or whether all I can do is provide a link to where other people can find it.
Yeah, well, possible we have some annotations about whether things are freely available, but I don't know that that's universal for everything. But
right.
For our collection, we don't actually have the resources themselves, just the
right.
links to them.
Right.
This is Alan Gould. Just a comment on that issue, that the advantage to having a link to an external resource is that if it gets updated,
uh-huh.
you don't have to worry about re-importing
right.
it. You know, you rely on their updating process.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so whenever we create a resource record, we would have a link to the original, but we think it's a valuable thing to have people be able to just look at it while they're on the site, what there is, but your point is well taken, that people should be thinking about that, or we should be thinking about that as well.
There's another piece to the Queen Collection that I think you might find valuable, which is the topical alignment between the topics that you have and the topics that were created in the Queen Collection, and you might be able to do a subset that way,
right.
where you know you might find the carbon cycle is not geographically limited to your area, so that there might be just a pass-through from topic to topic, and just you making a kind of a crosswalk between your topics and the Queen topics would be the maybe easy way to do that for some things.
Right, right. Yeah. So there's a lot of work we need to do for populating. That's probably our big job for the next, 3 months, is to appropriately populate this resource. And just to give you a heads up, the weakest part of our system right now is the information about the locations. So I'll just show you that relatively quickly and tell you what I mean by when I say it's the weakest part. So these are our, so the region is like very important to us. I think the resource, this whole website resource and the way that we're thinking about organizing the education about the science and the impacts are going to be useful generally. I think other people can look at it and see how it applies to what they want to do. And then there's things that we're going to be focusing on that are specific to the region. Obviously, we're going to be more interested in the coral reefs than a Great Lakes partnership, or Four Corners partnership is going to be. So if you here's the region, and if you go to a particular location, for example, American Samoa, then you would find information about American Samoa. And what we haven't done that we need to do is that when you go to a location, it needs to speak to the people of the location. What we have right now is the information that we've gathered in the different bins that we've gathered it in, and we've gathered kind of basic information about the location, and that's what shows up on this main profile tab. And then there's an education profile, which tells you how many students there are and how many schools and all that kind of information. But ideally, what we want when you go to the location page is something that shows you a map of American Samoa, where you can look at it with Google Maps and actually explore around and see some more about it. And then this is the place where we want to house the cultural and indigenous knowledge. And we haven't figured out how to do that yet. So the work that we've done in organizing this website is very Western-oriented. And I just came back from a series of meetings showing this to varieties of people in the region. And that was one message loud and clear, is that we need to have this website mirror our project perspective of connecting Western science and indigenous knowledge.
Mm.
And the locations area is where that's going to happen, and that's going to be a big focus of our work over the next couple of months. And we have some nice models of how to do that, but we haven't done that yet.
The Polynesian Cultural Center in Hawaii might get some very interesting ideas and how to communicate and how to connect. It seems to me, as you already mentioned, with maps and things like that, this is a visual spot where you might have, it could connect very powerfully by having someone within the community telling the story.
Exactly. That's where we're going. Is we want to do is empower the local communities to create their own web pages with the guidance of Prel, which is our partner that's based in Honolulu and has service centers in each of these entities. So what we have to do is figure out how to we just came from our first face-to-face full day and a half advisory board meeting, and it had a lot of people that bring those cultural and geographic perspectives. And the system that we're using is not that amenable to having that kind of information. So it's kind of interesting. What we're coming up against in our project is exactly what we're trying to accomplish through our project, and just finding the right words. So when we wrote our proposal, we were looking, we have Western science knowledge, and we have indigenous knowledge and ways of knowing. And we were trying to find, well, what do we want to do? We want to talk about integrating. People don't like using integrating as the word, because usually that means, you know, that we find a way to include the indigenous within the wiser, you know, more knowledgeable Western way. Marrying has its own connotations, and actually what we've come up with is actually what we're really doing is relating Western science and indigenous knowledge. So, you know, there's parts that are separate and very different, and then there's parts where we can see very strong, clear relationships. And
so it's more of Venn diagram.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, exactly, that's kind of, and, but we need, the site itself needs to embody that, and the easiest way for us to do that is to have this other environment in which that information is gathered and stored, and then have that environment relate with this more Western-oriented environment. So that's what our big challenge is over the next couple of months with respect to indigenous knowledge, culture, and the locations.
Perhaps you could build some style of linkage between the Western science knowledge part of the website and the locations and more indigenous information. Perhaps there's some way you could put a prompt on those windows such that there's fairly easy cross-linking or crosswalking between those sections of your website.
Yeah, I'm working with people who are pretty good at navigating stuff around the web, so, and I've got a fair amount of experience with that myself. So I just want to let you know that's one of the things that we're thinking and trying to figure out the best way to do.
Very exciting.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting project, and it's made us think about a lot of stuff. And actually, one of the things is coming as a scientist, you know, it's like we get very enamored about our way of doing things and what we know and can figure out, but we also have to have some humility because the mess that we're in is because of our way of doing things.
Well said.
So kind of like, okay, well, these guys haven't figured out how to fly to the moon or anything else like that, but on the other hand, they haven't changed the climate of the planet. So finding a way to make those things really coexist and work together. And if we're going to do any kind of education that's really going to work in the region, it has to be representative of it. And bringing in the skills and expertise that we have and figuring out how it all works together.
We hope you find synergy.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Art? Well, this is really fabulous, Art. Thanks very much for sharing it with all of us.
Yeah, I'm happy to share it.
We'll have a recording of this online. I don't know if the visual part, the Join Me session, is there a way to
record that part, Art? I don't know.
Not that I know of. I mean, people can go to the website. The website is now freely available.
Right.
It's pcep.dsp.wested.org. I wanted to present it this way because, you know, like I've been saying, it's not our ultimate vision for the website, but I think there's enough there for people to see what we're trying to do, see how it might be useful for them or any parts in it that are could already be useful, and move on. One thing I didn't share, I just do really quickly, is if you're still looking, is how we're organizing the information about climate impacts. So we're using 5 main headers: home and national security, freshwater and food security, ecosystems and biodiversity, public health and economic impacts. And then cutting across all of those, we're looking at the effects of sea level, extreme weather, temperature change, water cycle changes, and then special case about ocean pH, and then adaptation. And one of the things that we're finding, which probably most of you guys know already, is there isn't a lot of great information out there about adaptation. We just, you know, we have some experience with more on the level of acute, you know, events like a particular hurricane, or but there's a lot to learn. So it's going to be interesting to figure out how to share about that. And it's also making us realize, since there's no doubt in the Pacific that climate change is happening and that it's having impacts, we don't have some of the issues that some of the other regions have. And it also means our education can be focused a little bit, some more, on things like, how do I get my water? You know, where do my wastes go? How am I going to get energy? Where's my house going to be? What about our roads? So, you know, much more real practical things that people at the local level can get involved in.
Very good. Well, thanks a lot. So what we'll do is we'll post the URL with the recording so that, and then just say that you were showing the website so people could look at that as if they listened to the recording.
Right. Good.
Is there any other comments? I heard somebody else starting to try to talk.
Yeah, this is Dan. I was going to say, if you do want to record screen stuff in the future, I can do that. I have a Skype recorder which records the video of the screen.
Oh, nice.
As well as audio.
Yeah, I think there's something called Vario that does that also. But good.
Okay, we'll look into that in the future.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, I think we've come to the end of our hour. If there's any other comments, otherwise we will have our discussion next week, which I think we talked about having. There's no presentation plan, but I thought we talked last week about potentially talking about the Climate Literacy Network and things we might want to do in the future, maybe sort of a little bit of a planning kind of discussion. So we'll plan for that next week.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Art.
Bye.